This is In Focus on News Radio 1350 KMAN.
And Kathy Dawes, along with Dr. Raylene Woda, and she is Assistant Professor of Veterinary Oncology, Kansas State College of Veterinary Medicine. And we were just talking before we went on the air about daylight savings time. And of course, the animals don't understand why they have to eat an hour late or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, so. Not at all. I was coping fine over the weekend with the time change, but our three cats and our one dog definitely wanted to be fed an hour earlier than the clock really said it should be feeding time.
And I'm sure patients, too, at the hospital, they probably feel the same thing. Well, we were wanting to talk today about a variety of things. And obviously, as I said, you're assistant professor of oncology, and that means cancer, obviously. And clinical signs of what you know, that owner can look for in their pet, their family member pet, different things maybe they can look for.
Yeah, the signs of cancer can be quite insidious in some cases, and unfortunately, the diagnosis can come as a surprise to owners and clinicians in some cases. But there are certain things to watch out for, especially as a patient ages, because cancer is a disease in general of slightly older animals. And so some of those changes can include lumps and bumps that develop and persist and continue to grow over time, sores that don't heal, perhaps lameness or a loss of willingness to even exercise, weight loss, a loss in appetite, bleeding from certain cavities, such as maybe bleeding from the nose can be a sign of cancer, and breathing difficulties, and even strange odors in some cases can be a marker of cancer. But as you can tell, these things may also be markers of many other different types of diseases as well, so none of them are specific.
And unfortunately, they can't tell us what they're feeling. I mean, that's always the challenge that you have when working with animals.
That is definitely the challenge we face when working with people's pets. You know, we have to rely on the history from, you know, the clients telling us what's been going on with their pet over time, and then just our physical examination. Yeah, the pets can't tell us what's happening.
Well, while we have Dr. Woda here today, a reminder, phone lines are open 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350, or you can tweet us at 1350KMAN. And I know the different types of cancer, and as you said, it's more on some of the older animals, perhaps, but the types that you tend to see, and I think even breeds, it makes a difference, too.
Absolutely. There definitely are some breed predispositions that apply to certain different types of cancer. I think a lot of people out there are probably aware these days that some of our most popular breeds, such as golden retrievers and boxers, are predisposed to several different types of cancer and some of the most common types of cancer, such as lymphoma. Really common types of cancer also have breed predisposition. So osteosarcoma, which is a primary tumor of bone, there's a breed predisposition in a lot of the large and giant breed dogs, such as, once again, golden retrievers, but also, you know, Great Danes, St. Bernards, that type of breed of dog.
So just be aware of that, of course, if you have that particular breed, and I'm sure you do warn people of that.
Yeah, of course. So if people do own purebred dogs, it's important that they be aware of the different diseases that particular breed may be predisposed to, and not just cancer, but other diseases such as diseases of the cardiovascular system and endocrine diseases. Many of these have breed predispositions. And certainly if owners are considering purchasing a purebred dog or cat for that matter, once again, it's important to do your research beforehand to be aware of the things that those breeds may be predisposed to.
Something I hadn't realized, but I guess it does make perfect sense, is you actually encourage, if you can get some pets, help participate in research and clinical trials. What's that all about?
So the Veterinary Health Center at the university does actually have a very active clinical trials program, especially through the oncology service. I think we have 7 active clinical trials now. Many of those are for some of the most common diseases that we do encounter, such as lymphoma, osteosarcoma, and mast cell tumors. But a couple of the clinical trials are also not disease specific. And so these give owners the opportunity for their pets to participate in research that will hopefully help in the future to guide treatment decision making and even improve treatment outcomes for pets with cancer. And the interesting thing about it is also many of these clinical trials that I guess utilize dogs also have a lot of translational potential. And what I mean by that is the information that we gain from these clinical trials can be translated across into the human field of oncology.
So I'm guessing, I mean, you just want dogs, obviously, that have the condition. What about healthy pets? I mean, I guess you'd probably need some kind of a control. I don't know how it would work, but
it certainly depends on the trial and how it's been set up and conducted. So if we are searching for healthy controls, what we often use is pets that are coming through some of the other services at the hospital, such as the pet health service, which often sees pets that are coming in for their routine annual exams and vaccinations. So essentially what are expected to be perfectly healthy animals.
Well, it really does sound like a good way to learn more, too, in your research. And I don't know if there's advantages to kind of having your pet involved other than just being kind of a good Samaritan and allowing that to happen.
Yeah, so certainly a lot of owners participate for exactly that reason that you just expressed, you know, a sense of altruism and, you know, the idea that, you know, even though their pet has to go through this terrible disease process, that if they are participating in a clinical trial, it's testing a new diagnostic test or testing a new therapeutic option, that hopefully that will help maybe not their pet necessarily, but other pets in the future and maybe even human patients with cancer, you know, and make a contribution to that in the future. Yeah, many owners are really reassured and take some comfort from that idea. On top of that, there are often these studies are often financially funded to a certain extent, so there definitely can be some financial compensation to the owners, and that can be very helpful in certain circumstances. And so, you know, there is that as well that comes into play.
Well, it's good to hear, and it does make a difference, I'm guessing, that eventually it leads to what different types of drugs and things that you're able to give to future dogs. And
that's exactly right. The other thing that these clinical trials do is give the owners and their pets access to what are essentially cutting-edge technologies and cutting-edge ideas, so very new diagnostic techniques that can potentially pick up cancer earlier on in the disease process, or cutting-edge, you know, therapeutic options, so new ideas regarding the best way to treat these different types of cancers. And so it's one way that owners can gain access to that as well.
You are making progress, and I take it. I don't know if in layman's terms there's anything exciting going on that you can share with us, maybe some of the things that you're working on?
We've had a couple of really great clinical trials going on recently, which I can't share, I guess, the results of just yet. But a lot of people would have heard in, I guess, the general media regarding, you know, progress that's been made in the human field of oncology with immunotherapeutics and immunotherapy, which is now regarded as the fourth tenet of kind of treatment, along with surgery, chemotherapy, and radiation therapy. And we actually have had two clinical trials going on at K-State recently that involve immunotherapy. One is a cancer vaccine clinical trial, and the other is a form of CAR-T therapy, which involves trying to stimulate the patient's own immune system and T cells specifically to fight the cancer.
Exciting things going on. Well, before we wrap up today, anything else you're wanting to share? And maybe, obviously, what the standard treatment, you've kind of listed some of the things you're doing with your trials, but the standard treatment now, if someone does come in, I mean, say I walk in, I know something's not quite right with my pet, maybe the process involved.
It really does depend a little bit, I guess, regarding what you're exactly concerned about. So it's very easy, if there's an obvious lump or bump on the patient, to move forward with diagnostic testing. In that case, what we typically recommend is simply a fine needle aspirate to begin with, which is just sticking a little needle into the lump or bump and sucking out some cells and having a look at them under the microscope to see what cell type they are and whether they show, you know, malignant characteristics. And then from there, depending on the findings, you know, of the fine needle aspirate, then if we are concerned regarding it being malignant, we probably will recommend surgery and possibly some additional diagnostic tests to make sure it hasn't spread elsewhere in the body. if your concerns are less, specific at the outset and there's not an obvious lump or bump, then probably screening tests is what will be recommended at the beginning. So some screening blood work to see that liver, kidneys, all of those general organ systems are functioning okay. And then on top of that, some imaging. So perhaps chest x-rays or an abdominal ultrasound. And obviously all of that depends a little bit on the history from the client as well as the physical examination findings.
And as you say, as they get older, I've had a lot of dogs through the years, and it seems as they got older, they had a lot of little bumps all over their body, and that is pretty common.
It is very common, and in the majority of cases, they are going to be benign. The most common skin or subcutaneous lump on a dog is actually a lipoma, which is a benign accumulation of fatty tissue, basically. But in some cases, we don't get quite as lucky. And so we do encourage owners, and you know, if their dog has any lump or bump that's persisting there for a period of time, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months, or it's getting bigger, you know, over a period of time, maybe 1 to 2 months, or getting larger than, you know, 1 to 2 centimeters, to get it investigated as early as possible, because of course then that gives you the best chance, if it's unlucky enough to be malignant, of having all the therapeutic options available to you. You know, a surgery is easy when a lump is still small. It becomes a lot more challenging when it gets a lot larger.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you today. And again, we've had Dr. Raylene Woda with us today, Assistant Professor of Veterinary Oncology, Kansas State College of Veterinary Medicine. We'll take a break. When we come back, we have a couple ladies from the Little Apple Pilot Club going to tell us about a seminar on concussions that their group has coming up. And you're listening to In Focus on News Radio, KMAN.